This information is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with regard to the subject matter covered. It is offered with the understanding that the presenters are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If legal advice or other expert advice is required, the services of a competent professional should be sought.
Well, good morning and welcome, everyone. I am your host, James Orr, and this is another exciting class where we compare two different strategies. And today is a really interesting one because today we're going to talk about paying off rental properties early. And there's two primary strategies for doing that, which we're going to discuss, and sort of some prioritization that we could use to kind of decide which ones of the loans that we're going to pay off first. So we're going to discuss that. So today is really, is it better to pay off properties with cash flow or save up and pay them off in full? And specifically, we're going to talk about doing it while nomading. So we're going to try to compare two different nomad strategies, and we're going to look at paying off loans in two different ways. So I modeled this out in 304 U.S. cities, and we're going to take those models and we're going to use those to determine which of the two strategies is a little bit better or which one's a little bit worse, which one's going to get us to financial independence fastest, which one's going to give us the highest net worth, which one is going to have the highest risk or the lowest risk, and we're going to decide which one of those strategies is going to be better. Is it going to be universally better to do one way or another? So really, what do you think about this? To kind of give you the big picture. When you're thinking about paying off your rental properties, there's really two approaches. The first approach is to take any extra money you have above any kind of healthy amount of reserves. So let's say you decided, like, I want to have 6 months of reserves. I want to have 6 months of reserve of my personal expenses. I want to have 6 months of reserves of every one of the rental properties that I own. And I want to have, you know, a certain amount of money in my bank account. Let's say it's, you know, 10K plus 6 months of reserves plus 6 months of reserves on all my rental properties. And then anything above that, you know, for every penny above that, I'm going to take that money and each month I'm going to look at my account balance. I'm going to take that dollar amount and I'm going to stick it and I'm going to pay off a mortgage on that. That's one strategy. Using the extra cash flow you have, any excess money you have over at the end of the month, take that and dump it into a mortgage and get the return of that mortgage amount. And I'm going to emphasize that because when you go ahead and make an extra payment on your mortgage on a property, the return you're earning is the interest rate of the mortgage. So when we're in an environment like today, which is June 12th, 2023, we're seeing interest rates in that, you know, 6.5-7% range. So when you go and you take a extra amount of money and you pay off your mortgage, the amount you're earning on that extra money is 6.5 or 7% or whatever the interest rate is in your mortgage. If you're paying off 3% mortgages, then you're earning 3% on that money. Any extra money that you use to take to pay off a low interest rate mortgage, you're earning that low interest rate mortgage on it. If interest rates go up to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%, which they definitely can, then you're earning that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%, whatever the mortgage interest rate is when you pay off that mortgage. So here's the interesting thing. Another way of paying off properties is to save up your money, invest it in something else, like the stock market or bonds, or you want to get a little bit exotic, you could go do crypto or do anything crazy you want to do. You could take that money, you could save it up somewhere else, let that money grow until you get to the point where you could take the entire amount of money and you could go and pay off the mortgage in full at that point. And what's interesting about that is when you go and pay a little bit toward a mortgage, like let's say you owe $200,000 on a mortgage and you go in and you pay an extra $500 that month. Does that improve your cash flow at all? The answer is no, it does not improve your cash flow. Your mortgage payment is fixed. It doesn't change until the mortgage is paid off. Now, if you've got an interest-only loan, then it does change. But if you've got a 30-year or 15-year or 40-year amortizing loan, where the loan is supposed to pay off after 30 years or 20 years or 15 years or whatever it is, and you make an extra mortgage payment on that mortgage, it doesn't change your monthly payment. What it does is it shortens the time of the loan. So if you had made, you've got a 30-year mortgage and you had made your regular payments, that loan would have paid off in 30 years. If you make extra payments on it, it gets paid off sooner than 30 years, but your monthly payment on it does not change. So you keep making that $500 extra monthly payment on it. It doesn't pay off in 30 years. It might pay off in 12 years. You know, you have to do the math and figure out what it is, because it does vary based on interest rate and when you make that payment. But it does move the time frame in, okay? So any extra cash flow we dump into paying off our mortgage, it doesn't improve our cash flow on the property until the property is completely paid off. At that point, you get rid of your mortgage completely and your cash flow improves by whatever your mortgage payment was. So if you had a, you know, $1,500 mortgage payment, then your cash flow would improve by $1,500. So when you think about it, you could take, you know, any excess money you have sitting in your bank account at the end of a month, and you can use that to pay off your mortgage. It doesn't improve your cash flow. But if you wait until the very end, you actually say, look, I'm going to save up my money. I'm going to invest in stocks as an example, and I'm going to take that money and then I'm going to use it to pay off the mortgage in full. Then your cash flow does improve at that point. So what we're really talking about are these two options: taking money that you have extra at the end of the month and using that to pay off your mortgage. Again, it doesn't improve cash flow. It does just shorten the time that that mortgage gets paid off. And then eventually it does improve cash flow. Or invest money in the stock market, let it grow at whatever the stock market is earning. And then once you have enough there to pay it off in full, then you go and use that money. You take it out of the stock market, you pay off the property, and you improve cash flow. Now, what's interesting about that is, what's the relationship of the return you're earning on the mortgage if you go and take an additional payment on your mortgage in a short term versus the amount you would earn in the stock market? And that really is one of the big differences that we're talking about. You know, if you're earning 8, 9, 10% in the stock market and you're earning, you know, your mortgage payment is 6.5%, then by investing the money in the stock market, you do take on extra risks of investing in the stock market, different risks of investing in the stock market, because there's risk in everything we do. But you actually decide to use the different risk when you're investing in the stock market than if you've got your money in real estate. They're just different. But you could take that money and you could earn 8, 9, 10% in the stock market. Then that's growing at a faster rate than what the internal rate is by paying off the mortgage early. You're getting a 6.5% if you pay off the mortgage. You're getting whatever it is, 8% in the stock market if that's what you're earning in the stock market by doing that. So you're actually getting a better return by keeping the money in the stock market. And then once you have that money grow up to be enough, then you can take it in one big lump sum, pay off the mortgage and improve your cash flow. And then you get this really big bump in return, because you not only get like the interest rate gets paid off, the mortgage gets paid off rather, and your interest rate, you know, essentially becomes meaningless because you no longer have a mortgage, but now you have this massive amount of cash flow. And cash flow is one of the things that impacts whether or not somebody is financially independent, right? That's one of the factors as to whether or not you've achieved financial independence, is whether the cash flow from your rental properties exceeds your expenses, or any money you have in the stock market times the safe withdrawal rate exceeds your expenses. Okay, so those are different things. So really the two different strategies we could use are: take any extra money each month and pay off a mortgage a little bit. You're not going to pay off the whole thing in full that month, you know, until you've gotten very close to the low balance. Or save up your money somewhere else. And then once you have a big lump sum, pay the entire thing off in full in its entirety. So those are two strategies. And we're going to compare those today as to what they've got going on there. Now, which loan do you pay off? What I refer to as prioritization. Which loans do you prioritize? Are you going to go and look at the loan balances and sort them by, you know, this is my lowest loan balance and this is my all the way down to my highest loan balance? And then are you going to pay off the lowest loan balance first, or are you going to pay off the highest loan balance first? Okay. So today we're going to prioritize paying off the lowest loan balance, because another option is to consider the interest rate. You could do the lowest interest rate loan or the highest interest rate loan. And since all of the interest rates in this particular model that we did, the kind of analysis I did in 304 cities, I assumed all the interest rates were the same. We couldn't pick interest rate. Although I think it's pretty compelling if you thought about picking interest rate, and we can compare those in a future class. So really, prioritization comes down to: you can do balance, you can do lowest balance or highest balance. You could do interest rate, you could do the lowest interest rate mortgage, or you could pay off the highest interest rate mortgage first. And so those are kind of some of the prioritizations. Then in addition to that, you could say, look, I have some loans that are adjustable rate mortgages, ARMs, and I would rather get rid of my adjustable rate mortgages first, because those have an additional layer of risk. And so you could choose to prioritize paying off an adjustable rate mortgage, even regardless of the loan balance, regardless of the interest rate. Those could jump to the front of the line for you. Or you could just kind of group them in by the balance or interest rate like everything else. Or maybe you have some commercial properties that have balloons on them. You have a loan that you know is coming due in 10 years or 15 years or 20 years. You know, it's a 30-year amortization or a 20-year amortization, but it's a 10-year balloon. And so the entire loan balance may be due after 10 years. This is mostly with commercial properties. When we have commercial properties, a lot of times the lenders will not allow us to get 30-year fixed rate, fully amortized financing. They may give you a loan that is, you know, 25-year amortization, which the payments look like it's a 25-year loan, but they require you to pay off the whole thing or to refinance the whole thing after 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. Those are balloons. And so you may choose to prioritize paying off your balloon properties first. That may be a priority for you. Or it may be some other personal preference. Like you may decide, look, I know the math suggests I do it this way, but I really, really want to pay off this one property I have in a partnership. Or I want to pay off this one property that I don't have in a partnership. Or I want to pay off this one property that I plan on moving back into. Or I want to pay off this one property because it was my parents' old house and I have a strong emotional attachment to it. Or maybe it's like, you know, you think that this one's going to be a good cash flowing property and you know, the math may not suggest that. Maybe the cap rate is higher or lower and you want to focus in on that. So, I mean, those could be different reasons for you to have a personal preference or personal prioritization order for doing your properties. Okay. So recap strategies. You can use any extra money you have left over at the end of the month in order to pay down your mortgage a little bit, or you could save up somewhere else, invest in something else until you have the full amount to pay off an entire mortgage, then take that money in one big lump sum and pay off a mortgage in full. And then for prioritization, you can prioritize by the balance, lowest or highest. You can prioritize by the interest rate, lowest or highest. You could prioritize by adjustable rate mortgages or balloons, or you could decide to kind of prioritize based on personal preference. All right. So today's for today's analysis, for today's comparison, in both scenarios, scenario A and scenario B, we're utilizing the Nomad strategy where you are saving up money to put 5% down, moving into the property, living there for at least a year until you save up for the next down payment, but it is a requirement of the lender that you live there for a year. It is a requirement of you getting an owner-occupant loan with a low down payment, 5% down in this case, and that you are getting an owner-occupant interest rate, a little bit better interest rate than normal by being able to move into the property and live there. And so we move into the property, we live there for at least a year until we save up for the next down payment. And then we buy another property, we move into that one, we convert the previous one to a rental, and we repeat this until we have up to 10 properties. Okay, that is the Nomad strategy. And in both scenarios, we are paying off the lowest balance mortgage first. That's the prioritization we're doing. And we're using the amount above what I refer to as a healthy amount of reserves. And I define that as anything over 6 months of personal expenses and 6 months of reserves for all the other properties we own, plus 10% of the purchase price of a single property. So that we have enough for a down payment, some closing costs, and a little bit of reserves for getting another property. And so I decide to set a threshold that says anything above that amount, 6 months of personal expenses, plus 6 months of reserves on any properties we own, plus 10% of the purchase price of a single property. That way we don't pay off properties before, we don't prioritize paying off properties above buying a new property. Another way of saying why I model it that way. So that's what I refer to as a healthy amount of reserves. Anything above that, for the one where we're just kind of like using the cash flow in order to pay off the properties, we're anything above that amount we can use to pay off properties. And then for paying off the properties in full early, anything above the full amount of the mortgage being paid off plus a healthy amount of reserves, you would then trigger that rule and be able to pay off the property in full. Okay. You want to see my assumptions for this modeling. I decided to shorten the URL so that it's a little bit easier for you guys to access. You could type in refp.info/1, the number one, the single digit one. So refp.info/1. And that should take you straight to the page where we walk you through this analysis. Now, I hinted at this before, but we're looking at one of the things we want to determine is which one of these strategies, paying off a little bit with cash flow or waiting until we have the full amount in full to pay off the entire mortgage, which one of them allows us to be financially independent fastest. And so we need to define what financially independent is. Financially independent for this modeling is when your net positive cash flow, all the income you have from your rentals minus all the expenses you have for your rental properties, plus any invested assets you've got in the stock market or bonds or wherever else you've got, times the safe withdrawal rate, which we're using 4%, so the safe withdrawal rate, So the combination of cash flow from rental properties and invested assets times the safe withdrawal rate, when those two combined exceed your personal expenses, then you are considered financially independent. Now, normally when we talk about, you know, financial independence, we talk about any other passive income, like anything from pensions or annuities or Social Security, but I didn't model those in this analysis at all, so we can ignore those for the sake of this presentation. All right, so that's what we're defining financial independence as. Now, the assumptions. So each city's modeling uses that city's median home prices and an estimated rent for a median home price in that particular market. Now, we did not apply any of the 88 strategies we have for improving or optimizing cash flow. So you could and should and probably will do better than what I'm showing you on here if you apply any of the 88 strategies that we talk about, because really what I'm doing is I'm looking at just like, you know, going in there and using like what the median price property is and what the likely rent is on a property like that without doing any optimization. And the job income does vary based on each city, so that someone living in, you know, Los Angeles, an expensive city, versus someone living in like Mobile, Alabama, those two different areas are going to have different incomes so that people can qualify for the loans in LA and people can qualify for the loans in Mobile. But at the same time, in order to be financially independent, you need to replace the income we're giving you in that city. So someone living in LA has a higher threshold to be financially independent because they have to replace all that income that they need to use in order to be able to qualify for a property in that marketplace. And the person in Mobile, while they're not earning as much, they actually only need to achieve that same level of income in order to be considered financially independent in a lower price city. Okay. So where much is given to people in these more expensive cities, much more is expected. We start everybody in our modeling with enough down payment for a single 5% down purchase plus some closing costs. So about 7% of the price of a property in that marketplace. Okay. They're buying properties with 5% down as a nomad, and the interest rate for buying the owner occupant property is 6.5%. Plus, because they're not putting 20% down, they do have private mortgage insurance, and that is calculated in there as well, in addition to the 6.5% interest rate. Now, here's a really important assumption. The assumption I'm using for the stock market rate of return is 7%. And you may be saying, James, you know, stock market has definitely done a lot better than that. You know, my stock market rate of return is whatever it is, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14%. And some of you are like, 7%, man, I'm lucky if I can get 3% in the stock market. So there's a lot of variation depending on what you invest in and how you invest and how long you've held and what time period over you've held. So I could make a case for that being a slightly different number as well. But I've used 7% and it's consistent across all of them. It does give a slight advantage to those that are saving up money to be able to pay off the property in full with one lump sum payment if that number is higher. But really, what it comes down to is it's the relationship between what you can get investing that money somewhere else, whether that's stocks or bonds or crypto or anything else you're considering doing, compared to the interest rate on the mortgages that you could pay off as an alternative. You know, if mortgage interest rates are 11%, you're earning 7% in the stock market, I bet you paying off your mortgage would look a lot better because you're paying off an 11% return that you're getting on that money versus getting 7% in the stock market. Well, now we're comparing and saying, look, we're getting 7% in the stock market, but we're only getting, you know, 6.5% when we pay off the mortgages. So the stock market's got a slight edge because you're getting a slightly higher return when you do that. Okay. So the relationship between what the mortgage interest rates are at the time, which we're using 6.5, and what I use for the stock market rate of return for our modeling, which I'm using 7%, matters. Okay. You can see all of my assumptions in detail if you go to refp.info/model, M-O-D-E-L. So refp.info/model, you can see all the assumptions. And I did model this out for 100 years. And I realize some of you are like, 100 years, I'm not going to be alive in 100 years, James. I said, okay, you know, but I was stopping it at some arbitrary point, you know, 40 years or 50 years or 60 years. And I'm like, look, I'll just run it out to 100. That way I get a true idea of when things happen, you know, going all the way out to 100 years in the future. And so we can look at that. All right, so let's look at the results. So which is better? Is it better to take the money and pay off a little bit of your mortgage each month that you have excess money, you know, kind of like from cash flow? Or is it better to save up your money somewhere else and pay off the whole thing in full in one lump sum? And specifically right now, we're going to talk about how fast you get to financial independence. how speedy you are to being financially independent, where all the income from your assets, the cash flow from the rental properties, plus any money you have invested in the stock market times the safe withdrawal rate, when the sum of those exceeds your personal living expenses. So which one is better? Well, I'll tell you this. In the 304 cities that we modeled, in 78 cities, 78 out of 304, it would have been faster for you to be financially independent if you actually just paid off the properties a little bit each month with cash flow. 78 cities, a little bit more than 25% of the time, it would have been better for you to actually pay off a little bit each month with cash flow. In 195 cities, almost two-thirds, more than 60% of the time, I think. About 60% of the time. Let's call it 60% of the time. About 60% of the time in different cities, you would have been better off saving up your money in the stock market until you had a whole amount to pay off an entire mortgage in full, and your entire lowest balance mortgage in full. Then you save up for the next one in full, and then you pay off that one. In 195 cities, that would have been better. And in 31 cities, about 10% of all the cases, it did not matter which strategy you did. They were exactly the same amount of time for you to be financially independent. Okay. So in most of the cases, 60% of the time or so, approximately, it would have been better for you to save up and pay them off in full. In about 25% of the cases, it would have been better for you to actually pay off a little bit each month. And this shows you the breakdown of when it happens. So you can see there's a whole bunch of ones that get paid off in full early. There's a whole group of them right here when you actually end up paying off a little bit each month where they start compounding and that happens. And you can see that there's a range. But there are times when, you know, the ones where you're paying off in full, those take a lot longer. So it really depends on the city. And this chart shows you a little bit of that. This chart shows you the price of properties in the city along the x-axis. And so it shows you the ones that are more expensive cities are over here. The less expensive cities are over here. And then it shows you the difference in how long it took to be financially independent. In the spots where it's green, green means that paying off the properties in full, saving up money in the stock market, and then using that full amount to pay off a mortgage only when it's you've got enough to do the whole thing at one time, is this number of months faster. So in some cases, it's 10 years faster. In some cases, it's probably close to 20 years faster for you to actually do that where you pay off the properties in full when you're doing the properties. The blue ones are ones where it's faster, where you pay off a little bit each month in the properties. And some of those are 20 years faster. So it really depends on the strategy. It's not like you're like marginally faster. There's definitely ones where it's significantly faster for you to save up the money and pay them off in full. And there's other ones where it's significantly faster if you actually pay off a little bit each month on the mortgage. And so it really depends. There's a lot of variation in what is going on here. Even though the numbers I'm going to show you here in a minute about the averages and the medians, they don't seem to be that significant, but they are significant. It's just that when you look at all of them as an aggregate, they're relatively narrow together. All right, so we talked about speed to financial independence, which one was going to be faster. And we basically said that paying off the properties in full was probably going to be faster in most cities. But it could be a lot faster to pay them off a little bit at a time, depending on which city we're talking about. So let's talk about the net worth of all the different strategies, of all the different cities, rather, at year 40. We're going to kind of use a cutoff point at year 40 to kind of model like when you have a higher net worth. And in 232 of the cities, you would have a higher net worth in year 40 if you actually saved up the money to pay them off in full. 232 cities, a pretty significant number of those. In only 61 cities, about 20% of the time, it was fast. It was a higher net worth for you to actually pay off a little bit at a time. And then 11 cities, it didn't matter. Didn't matter which one you chose. It was going to be about the same net worth. And so you can see this is the breakdown of which ones are better. The blue ones are the ones where paying off in full is better by this dollar amount. And there are sometimes when it's significant, like more than $5 million, more than $10 million, sometimes significantly more than that, and how much of a difference net worth made if you do the other strategy. And unlike the other one where we talked about what the big difference was in terms of speed to financial independence, where it was pretty evenly distributed, there were some where, doing one strategy gave you pretty significant speed advantage and doing the other strategy gave you pretty significant speed advantage. With net worth, we don't see quite that big difference by paying off the properties early with a little bit of cash flow, with like, you know, not saving up all the money investing in the stock market, so you have to do it in full. But the ones where you decide to pay just a little bit each month, there are no significant ones where you see a huge amount of extra money in terms of net worth in year 40. When you do the ones in full, sometimes they are very significant. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. And that could be a compelling reason to actually save up and do them in full. All right, so we're going to summarize some things here. So in general, on average, you have a higher net worth when you do the pay off the properties in full by saving up the stock market until you have the total amount to pay off an entire mortgage. And it's about 27% better on average for you to pay them off in full. On median, it's about 32% better on average. Okay. So it's about $2 million difference on average, or yeah, about $2 million difference on median as well. Okay. In terms of how fast you get to financial independence, it's about 7 months faster on average for you to pay them off in full, or about 13 months on median, if you want to look at it that way. Okay. So remember what I told you before, though, that there was this wide variation depending on which city you picked as to which one's faster and by how much? Even though these seem like, hey, it's only about a year, 7 months to 13 months, somewhere in there on average or on median, realize there's a lot of variation depending on what city you pick. So if you decide you're living in, you know, whatever city you are, and you look at that, you're like, oh my gosh, it's so much better for me to go ahead and choose to do this in my city by using this number versus going and using it in another city. So you really do need to drill down and look at your own city to do that. All right, let's talk about risk. So I'm going to break risk down. We look at a lot of different measures of risk, right? And I'm going to break risk down into two major groups. There's the risk of resiliency, how resilient you are in your portfolio to drops in rent, or how resilient you are in your portfolio to drops in home prices. So that's one measure of risk. It's kind of like a group. It's like all the resiliency stuff. Or I'm going to look at like all the different ways we measure kind of like debt. So debt to income and your debt load compared to your net worth, or your debt load compared to how liquid you are, like your liquidity balance, like your account balance in your properties, or how many months of reserves you have saved up on properties. And I will tell you, when we look at this, what we see is paying off the properties in full by taking the money, investing in the stock market until you have enough money in order to pay it off in full, that gives you a much better resiliency. You are much more resilient to a drop in rents or drop in home prices if you wait and you have this big lump sum and then you pay off the property in full. I don't know why. We'd have to drill down and look at it as to what's going on there, but that is what the numbers are suggesting, is that the resiliency is better when we pay off the properties in full. However, on all the other measures related to risk, because you're paying off the properties a little bit each month and you're reducing your risk as we go immediately, then I think that that's why all of these measures of risk, like for measuring, you know, debt to income, debt to net worth, debt to account balance, like all of those tend to be better if you just pay off a little bit of the loan each month with cash flow. But there's a weird thing that's going on here. Even though technically all of our measures of risk, like this debt to income, debt to net worth, debt to account balance, like all of those tend to be better when we pay off the properties early, what I will also point out to you is when you have a huge amount of money that you're saving up, that you've got invested somewhere else, that you're super liquid with, you can handle a lot more risk when you're doing that. When you pay off a mortgage, that money is hard to get at. I realize you could sell it or you could refinance and get your money out. I do understand that. But as far as like ability to access, speed to access, and your limitations of being able to access that money, it's a lot easier to access money that's in a savings account than it is to pull out money in equity somewhere else. All right? So those are sort of like the measures of risk. Now, we've been dealing primarily with this kind of like median price property in a marketplace and the rent kind of associated with that. You could apply all the 88 strategies we have to improve cash flow to improve on those numbers, and you should, right? We're basically using like kind of like a almost like a worst case, typical someone going in and just picking properties at random. You should be able to choose and you should be able to do better. And we do model some of those improvements in some of the other analysis, and I'll definitely cover those when we kind of do some more comparison classes. However, if you're an expert in your local marketplace and you look at my analysis for your city and you're like, hey, James, your numbers are off a little bit here, definitely reach out to me so that we can update the numbers and have it be even more accurate. I am not an expert in 304 different markets. Okay. We use a database, which I pull from, you know, actual data, and we use numbers that are based on that city. But my numbers could be wrong. And you could come in and say, look, you know, we're not usually buying these median price properties. We're buying, you know, 40% properties, or we're buying properties that are this price and this rent. And, you know, and I don't want to go in here and put in amazing deals that no one's going to be able to get except you, because you're awesome and you know how to find like really amazing deals. I want to use like the typical case for a typical investor going in there that almost any investor in that marketplace could realistically find. And that's what I want to use. So if you could help me with those numbers, please reach out. You know, it's a call to action for you to contribute to the community and for you to assist us with improving the numbers so that the analysis we do is better for everybody, not just you. All right. All right. So I want to point out one other thing. Because we're doing this nomad strategy where you move into a property, you live there for a year, and then you convert it to a rental property, you are required to be buying properties in your local marketplace. If you utilized a different strategy, if you decided, look, I'm going to just buy 20% down non-owner occupant properties, or 25% down non-owner occupant properties, or, you know, 100% down non-owner occupant properties where you don't have to move in, you're just buying rental properties with 20, 25, 50%, 100% down, whatever strategy you're using, where you're not doing the nomad strategy, you could choose to invest in another marketplace. You could look at the numbers and say, look, you know, this strategy in this market doesn't work that greatly for me, you know, to kind of meet my goals. And so I may choose to invest in another market around the country because those numbers seem to be better. And so you could choose to do that. All right. So in conclusion, in our current market conditions, our current price, current interest rates, current rents, in about 304 US markets, saving up to pay off properties in full is slightly faster and results in a higher net worth. It's faster in 195 out of 304 cities, or about 64% of the cities. It's a higher net worth at year 40 in 232 out of 304 cities, or about 76% of the cities. The market does matter, though. It matters more for speed to financial independence, but it does matter. And which is less risky? Well, it really depends on how you measure risk. For resiliency, like how resilient your portfolio is to drops in rent, or how resilient your portfolio is to drops in home prices, over the entire 100 years, it's better when you pay off properties in full. Okay, remember, we're doing this as an average over the 100-year period, whereas certain periods of time, it may look better with different strategies. It may be better with the other one at certain periods of time. But over that 100-year period, the overall average, it's better for you to pay off the properties in full. Okay, but measures involving debt tends to be better when you pay off properties as soon as you have money to pay off the debt. So on the like measures of risk, where we're measuring like your debt load, like all the different things like debt to income, debt to liquidity, debt to account balance, like those types of measures, it tends to be better for you to actually pay off the properties a little bit each month that you have extra money. But by doing the strategy where you are setting your money aside in order to pay off properties in full, you are taking on additional level of risk by investing in something else. Whatever that something else is, if it's the stock market, you have additional risks of investing in the stock market, different risks of investing in the stock market. So realize that you do add a new dimension, a new risk dimension, the dimension of investing in the stock market. You now are subject to the risks of that when you do it, and for a longer period of time, because you have this money out there for a while and you have a larger amount of money. So your risk is your amount of exposure is increased when you do that. While you're investing in the stocks, for example, in order to pay off the properties. However, that also means that you have more liquid reserves until you deploy that money in order to pay off the properties. If something happened and you needed $50,000 for something, having all this money waiting to pay off a property in the stock market could be really helpful because it's very liquid for you to get at that money. In general, it is best if you look closer at your specific market and apply as many of the 88 cash flow improving strategies that we have as practically possible to improve on your own implementation. And you can go and see your city and select it out and kind of do some analysis if you go to refp.info/model, M-O-D-E-L. Just pick your city from the list, and we list out a whole bunch of different models. Drill down and look into those and really understand what's going on if you need to do that. All right, this has been James Orr. Hope you've enjoyed the class for today. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye for now.